And that's such a counterintuitive mindset to what everybody thinks about it. Everybody is afraid of the first no. Then if they hear that no, they're afraid of more because they don't want the rejection, but they don't recognize the fact that we are all rejected all of the time.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Austin McCullough. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Austin. One, he was already a key advisor to a software as a service in the fintech space that was acquired in early 2021. Two, he has personally made over, wait for it, 16,000 prospecting contacts on LinkedIn, as well as helped clients make over 25,000 prospecting contacts. And three, although he's only 5'7", he walked on to play football at a community college where he later earned a scholarship at the beginning of his sophomore season. Austin McCullough, welcome to Your Intended Message.
George, thank you for the great introduction, and we're going to have a great talk today.
You bet. And I'm guessing you weren't a linebacker.
Surprisingly enough, I was. I tell people all the time, I was an outside linebacker, which for our team was kind of a hybrid between an outside linebacker and a strong safety, actually. Technically, it was a nickelback. But a lot of people were always surprised. They thought I was a running back, but nope, I was a linebacker. It didn't add up all too well, but it was a good experience.
I'm guessing that you gained some, not only experience, but some lessons from that experience that has helped you today. And if there are one, two, or three lessons from your experience playing football, being a smaller guy than the rest of them probably, what are those lessons that have stayed with you?
That's a really good question. I've never had anybody actually ask me that question. The one thing that's coming to mind is, it's not always a bad thing to have disadvantages. Now, was it a pain because I was smaller, so I didn't have the physics on my side? Yeah, but I believe life is always preparing you for where you need to go. And obviously, my intention was never, or my plans were never to be in the NFL. But because I needed to compete with these guys who were much larger than I was on the football field, I had to work out harder. I had to work out more. And that taught me to be more consistent, taught me to be more disciplined. And for example, our coach even wanted to be one of those leaders who, whenever we were doing something and he was up on stage, he'd always call me up to demonstrate an exercise when we were lifting. So that taught me to be a leader in front of others through my actions, not just through my words. So I guess now that I'm an entrepreneur, and I have been for years, playing college football, especially at the size disadvantage, ended up being a benefit because it just taught me how to be consistent, taught me how to be a hard worker.
And, you know, if we talked about nothing else, Austin, that one point would probably make this interview valuable by itself. Mm-hmm. But we're here, and I'm thinking that, you know, so having a disadvantage is actually an advantage because mm-hmm. you learn to get over the disadvantage. You learn to use it to your benefit, and that's probably the best lesson, especially when it comes to sales, because selling anything is tough. You've always got competition. Let's talk about the sales conversation. You help people improve and make their sales conversation more effective. Where does the conversation start?
That's a great question, George. So I always like to say there are four steps. Okay, and I'll go from the first to the fourth, top to bottom for anybody who's watching. The first point in sales is making the contact. The second stage, right below that, is the conversation, and that's what we're gonna come back to. That's the answer to your question, George. The third one is you need to set up meetings, and obviously the fourth is closing business. Sorry, kind of fumbling around. So to recap this, contact, conversation, meeting or meetings, and then new business, closed business. So to answer your question, the most important one there is the conversation. Because in today's world, it's not that hard to make a contact, especially on social media or you reach out to your family and friends. There are a lot of people to contact, okay? When you get a meeting set, it's not as tough to make a sale, because if you say the wrong word or their objections, we all know that it's easier to handle those actually on the call. And then closing business, have you ever heard sales is about opening, it's not about closing? You know what I'm talking about?
Got it.
Yeah. A lot of people always think it's about closing. So really the bread and butter out of those four steps is in the conversation piece. And of course, I'm more than happy to elaborate on that.
Well, please do. Please elaborate. Please tell us. And I'm curious too about the conversation within one's own mind going into the conversation.
100%. I think a lot of this comes down to preparation, right? So even for example, with me, I have a morning routine. And I know a lot of people might be sitting there thinking, what does a morning routine have to do with closing new business? That doesn't make any sense, Austin, but it makes complete sense. So George, I'll ask you a question as part of my answer. Are you aware of and do you believe in the law of attraction?
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes. I believe that we all have an energy. And now I don't try to get too far out there because I'm not a scientist who can explain it, but I've just noticed it through firsthand experience. When I'm in a good energetic state, I get better results. When I'm in a bad energetic state, I push people away. I'm like a repellent. And you're nodding your head, so you're with me on this. When I have a morning routine, meditation, praying, drinking a glass of water, making my bed, and a few others, that gets me to be calm. It gets me to be present, allows me to focus on every single task at hand. And when I'm calm and present and focused, my energy is in a good place. So my conversion rates improve. Now, do I have this down to a science where I've been tracking it? No, but that's probably a project in the future. But that is something that I want to recommend to somebody right away. Now, of course, that leads down to a different path. Have some sort of morning routine so you know how to recenter and refocus yourself every single day so that if you do have sales calls, you're being effective with them rather than just being reactive, because you want to be proactive, not reactive.
And curious enough, Austin, I experienced something similar to that last week. I had some days where I wasn't so productive. And then one day, I just went ahead and started something that I'd been putting off. And what I noticed is once I started, which was the hardest thing to do, once I started, it was easier to keep it going. And then I noticed, hey, this is going along pretty good. I've got some momentum here.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. But what I like there, you said something really key there. You just started. So a lot of the people, like, for example, if I'm talking to financial representatives, I'm not a fan of cold calls, but some of them still do it. If they have to make cold calls, they might look and say they have to do 100 for the day. Obviously, that number's arbitrary, maybe 100, 150, maybe 50, who knows? But just start with the first one. Too many people get hung up on the bigger picture when you don't get there anyways. If you have a staircase, are you jumping up to step 15? No, right? You're starting with step one, then you go step two, maybe you go step four, maybe you're feeling a little ambitious and you skip a couple, but your legs only stretch so far. Maybe you go three, you jump a little bit, but the whole point is, if you take it one at a time, it's not as daunting. And honestly, a lot of the time, it's that 0 to 1 where we're afraid to start. Once we do one, we get in the groove a little bit. So I would just say, honestly, dumb it down and start with the basics.
And I've heard it said that it's better to follow an imperfect system. And we're talking about systems here. It's better to follow an imperfect system than no system at all.
Ooh, that's a really good point. This is something that I believe will resonate with some of the listeners. You have competition, right? Everybody has competition, whether we want to recognize it or not. If you're too worried about being perfect, which means you're not putting in the action, that means by default, somebody is doing better than you are because they're not afraid to put in the action. They're making progress. They're contacting your prospects. Now, I'm not a fan of the lack mindset of saying, oh, well, they're getting the business, so I don't have any. No, that's not always the case. There's so much business to go around. But we don't want to be just purposefully pushing off business and not taking it on and just giving it to our competitors because we're afraid to actually put in the work and actually afraid to act. You see where I'm coming from, George?
Yeah, what I'm hearing is that, and maybe this is part of your message, we need to get used to people saying no.
That's a great point. I heard this one time about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And the speaker said, think about getting a no every 24 hours, every hour within a 24-hour day. And assume that you know you're going to receive 24 no's, right? 24 hours in a day. He says, if you know you're going to get 24 no's, and then the 25th hour you're going to get a yes, are you going to go through those no's as quickly as possible or as slowly as possible? Everybody goes, well, if you know you're going to get a yes and you're going to get results after the 24th no, you're just going to rush through those as quickly as possible. And that's such a counterintuitive mindset to what everybody thinks about it. Everybody is afraid of the first no. Then if they hear that no, they're afraid of more because they don't want the rejection, but they don't recognize the fact that we are all rejected all of the time. I tell clients, I still get people who have no shows. I get people who don't show up to meetings, and I've been on a lot of sales calls and I've closed a lot of clients, but I still have no shows. I still have people reschedule, and you just get to the point where you don't take it personally. And actually, can I add one more point onto this as well?
Please do.
Well, something actually I told one of my clients Tuesday, this is a really, really key point. So I hope everybody intently listens to this section. If you are taking no personally, that means you're not doing enough activity in the first place, because you're paying too much attention to the people who are rejecting you, right? So for example, I do automated prospecting on LinkedIn. If somebody says no, that's fine. I move on to the next one, because you build momentum over time. I have a ton of contacts in my CRM. I have clients. I have people I'm following up with. So as you build out your pipeline, you don't take the no's personally because you have so much other business to actually lean on. So really, when we're taking no personally, it's because we know that we have nothing else to lean on. So we have that lack mindset that where's my next meal going to come from? Where's my next commission check going to come from? You see where I'm coming from, George?
Yeah, and I believe what I'm hearing is that we need to, and tell me if this is right, we need to manage our emotional response to the word no. And maybe part of that morning routine, we look in the mirror and we say to ourselves no, and then we smile. We say, I'm going to control how I react to the no's.
You're completely right. And what I love about what you just said, George, you're bringing awareness to the issue. Okay. So actually, I'm about to release a video soon. And by the time this podcast is out, the video will probably have been released before the podcast. But a lot of people overlook how to change a habit. Okay. So this actually can go apply to any area of your life that you want to improve, literally. But we're going to apply it to hearing no. So a lot of people who are going to be listening have an iPhone. Even if you don't, you can use a different application, but I have an iPhone. It's called the Reminders app. It comes already pre-installed on your phone when you get it. I'm sure we've heard of, and George, I'll check with you. Have you heard of daily affirmations before?
You bet.
This is my little twist on daily affirmations. I like daily affirmations, but what I'm about to say is a little bit more effective. So rather than saying, I am successful in the mirror, which obviously that's not going to hurt you. That's not a bad thing. But I like taking something that you know you need to work on and focusing on it daily, okay? So in particular, if you're struggling with hearing no, this is just I'm thinking on the spot, you could go put a daily reminder that goes off daily, right? And we'll get into why that's beneficial. But you could go get a daily reminder that says something like, one no closer to success, or you will not receive no's forever, or receiving no's is a given, push forward anyways. The point here isn't the particular script. The point is for whoever the listener is, put something that resonates with you. So when you read it every day, you're critically thinking about it. What you're doing is you're retraining your brain, you're rewiring your brain through daily habit. You're correcting your daily habits through daily discipline, should I say, not daily habit. And like, you know, I'm sure we've heard this all before. A buddy sent it my way yesterday. It takes 21 days to build a habit, 90 days to build a lifestyle. If you do that every single day, you're going to get to the point where you're like, yeah, the no's aren't too bad. Now, you can't just read that every day and then go be afraid of the no's still and be afraid to even attempt because you have to put in the work. But if you're putting in the work and you're paying attention to that each day, you're going to slowly rewire the way that you think about it. Have you ever tried that for yourself, George? Anything similar?
Yeah, definitely. And probably my, well, here's a physical example. One of my morning routines is I either run or I walk. And I've been doing this for decades. Mm-hmm. And if for some reason I'm not able to get out and run and walk, I feel lousy all day because I'm used to that. And what that does for me, one, it's exercise, and two, it's thinking time for me. So now it's part of my routine. It's how I get ready for the day. And yes, so one of the things I do while I'm out there is I do utter affirmations. Mm-hmm. And you know, if anybody saw me walking along talking to myself, I'm on my phone.
Right. And I'm with you. And don't feel bad about talking to yourself. Any successful person that I listen to, they always admit that. They'll joke about it because it does seem weird. But I don't know. It's like a way to vent to yourself, too. Affirmations boost yourself up, a way to vent, which is good. And to go back to what, because I thought of one thing with the daily reminders. It's crazy because this isn't something that I'm just telling people to go do because I heard that it was a good idea. This is something I've been doing for myself for years. For example, one of mine that I used to have go off daily, now it's weekly because, of course, it doesn't need to be a habit that I need to work on as much. It says, don't be afraid to ask. Because when I'm not in as confident of states, sometimes I'll be on a call with a prospect and we'll be on a video call and I can see their body language and they might not seem like they're all too interested. And so sometimes I make the poor assumption of thinking they're not interested because I think I know exactly how they feel. So that goes into, if nobody's ever read the book, The Four Agreements, that's the best sales book I can recommend. It's not even oriented to be a sales book, but trust me, George, if you go read it, you'll see how it applies.
The Four Agreements.
The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And we could talk about that as well if you'd like. But for example, going back to the point that I said, don't be afraid to ask. Sometimes we just don't even ask because we think that we're automatically going to get a no. But if you really think about it, you're already getting a no if you refuse to ask in the first place. So you might as well try.
Yeah, I know there's those times when the little voice in your head is talking to you and you're looking at your prospect and you're saying, oh, he just crunched his face. You think he doesn't like me? He doesn't like what I said. He thinks the price is too much. He didn't say that, but that's with the little voice in your head. I better not. I don't think he's interested anyways. Maybe I'll just leave.
Isn't that unfortunate? Because, I mean, we can all think that we're smart and geniuses and the most gifted person in the world, but we're very flawed. That's okay. That's completely fine because we all are. Right. And I think that, I mean, shoot, that goes into the topic of accepting the imperfections and not expecting to be perfect, too, is just acknowledging the fact that we're not perfect and you can't aim for perfect. Otherwise, you're going to be letting yourself down every single time, you know.
And that's a good reminder that, hey, we're not perfect. You're not perfect. None of us are perfect. So stop pretending. And even my offering isn't perfect. But it's right for you now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be perfect to be right. Mm-hmm.
I like that too. That's a really good point because especially in the entrepreneurship space, people are always looking to have the perfect product. But I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but a lot of the time it's not the best product that goes to market and has the most success. It's often the one that comes down to the distribution. And that's why like sales marketing is so key, right?
And yes, we've had many examples of that. And I know. This is before your time, but there are people who still think that beta was better than VHS tape.
Really? Wow.
But VHS is what became the popular tape for movies in that. But beta was far better quality. It just wasn't it wasn't promoted well. It wasn't distributed well. I mean, and that's, you know, guys my age, we remember those things. We remember tapes.
Well, no, I mean, and to get the point across, so I'm 24 years old, definitely heard of VHS. I mean, I used those as a kid, barely have heard of beta. So, I mean, like when you said that at first, I was like, do I know what George is talking about completely? So I think that demonstrates the point of which was a little bit more successful. And it, I mean, that's That perfectly goes into the point of what we're talking about, is if you're trying to hone in on your craft and you're trying to get super good and be the perfectionist, you're never getting yourself out there. And the best way to learn anyways is to get feedback from those who you're selling to. I mean, I launched the most recent service that I had, what was it, like 5 or 6 months ago, and we're constantly doing reiterations because it's not like it was a bad product, and it was a good product, but it can always be better. But I didn't want to wait for it to be perfect before we launched it. Otherwise, here we would have been 5, 6 months down the road. Right.
Mm-hmm. And Microsoft taught us that your product doesn't have to be perfect before you launch it. We'll make updates as we go.
If anything, you just end up spending more money trying to make it perfect too, because it was Peter DeAger. Am I saying that properly?
Peter DeAger. Yes.
An example that he used in one of your episodes, I can't remember if it was 3 or 4, but it was recent. He talked about how one company spent, what was it, $25 million on something that, on a product that flopped, or on a project. So I can't remember exactly what he said, but that's a couple of dollars. And yeah, you could write off as a tax expense, but I'd prefer not to spend $25 million to have it not work out.
Mm-hmm. So let's return to the conversation with the sales product. Is there a process? And you talked about the importance of the opening versus the closing. So tell us more about that.
Oh, yeah. So two different questions. I'll address the first one. So in terms of the sales process, my business specifically, me and my account executive, we use a process called cold to sold. If everybody looks that up on Google, they could probably find the PDF. Let me actually look it up really quick and I'll read it because I know not everybody's going to be watching. I want to see if you Google cold to sold, I want to see if it'll be there, because I'm briefly going to go through the high level steps of it. I'm not finding the PDF though. So essentially what it's about, let me explain it to everybody. First, you need to make a little bit of small talk to build rapport. And this is assuming that you're on the call with somebody, not the online prospecting that I often teach with clients. You need to have a little bit of small talk to build rapport. Then you need a transition statement, so it's not an awkward transition going from building rapport to actually having more of a serious talk, okay? This is where I think a lot of people make a big mistake. So I'm really glad that you asked, George. A lot of people then go into pitching their product or their service. Now, it depends on what you did talk about over the LinkedIn DMs, because that adds another layer of complexity. But let's say you're on a cold call and this is how it's going. Don't go into pitching your products or services. You want to ask questions to bring awareness to their pain points. This is a huge issue that a lot of salespeople have, is they don't focus enough on the other person and they don't understand really what they're struggling with. So anyway, and we can come back to that. That could be another full-on conversation. Once you understand the key pain points, you not repeat them, but you make sure that you understood your prospect properly. You want to make sure that those are actually the problems that they believe that they're struggling with. And then from there, what you want to do is you want to connect those problems, those pain points, to the solution for them. Of course, if you can't solve their problems, don't try to act like you can. Go refer them to somebody else. But if you know you can, you use those pain points to really tap into the emotional factor with them and say, I understand what you're going through and we can definitely help you with that. And then of course you can get into more of the details. But I can find that PDF for you, but that's something that I love using for my own sales process. So to take it a layer deeper, and we can touch on this as well, I actually have a Google document that I share with my account executive, and he's just another salesperson for the business if I didn't explain that. And I actually have bullet points for what we should go through during conversations. So I have a couple tips on what to talk about with building rapport. I have a few questions that I told him and what I use to ask the prospects to discover the pain points, because some questions are better than others, as we know. And then I also have some bullet points that talk up the business, right? There's a reason why I talk about how I've made 16,000 prospecting contacts, how we've now made closer to 28,000 prospecting contacts for our clients. It's to build the social credibility. And I talk about other factors as well. So the fact that I have a document to rely on, it keeps the process consistent. You see where I'm coming from, George?
Mm-hmm. I do. I see the systematic approach here.
Yes.
And some people might say, Austin, that all sounds fine in theory, but when I'm in a conversation with a product, I can't be checking my notes to make sure I'm asking the right question at the right time. We just have to talk. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that?
I think it kind of depends on the setting. Because actually, ironically enough, like for example, we're on a Zoom call, like right now as we're recording it, and obviously this isn't a prospecting call, it's a podcast, my screen is enlarged, so all I can see is us talking, George. But all I have to do is click the little yellow button to minimize the screen. And if I already have my Google document pulled open, it's not that hard to make it look like I'm briefly checking something like a question and then go off that. Now, the entire call, are you going to want to be modeling or are you going to want to be reading it like a script? No, because you don't want to sound stiff on a sales call. You want it to sound authentic. And that's why it's good to practice it. But I always recommend having it open on your sales calls in case you go blank. Maybe you're not as fresh. Because then all you have to do is just minimize your screen and check over it. Now, in person, I could try to make up some solutions, but honestly, all of my calls are online. So I'll just stick to the domain that I have a lot of experience with, and I won't even try to talk about doing sales calls in person. Is that helpful to hear?
That makes sense, yes. And I can see that. So your specialty is connecting with prospects online.
Online, yes.
It's not, you're not knocking on doors and walking into offices and saying, oh, nice trophy there.
You're right. I'm not walking into offices. I'm not reaching out to family members. I'm not reaching out to friends. Almost everybody who I work with was a complete stranger before we talked. So that's why I'm such a big fan of asking the open-ended questions and focusing on the other person instead. It's because especially with a complete stranger, it's more of an uphill battle to prove your credibility. And now as you build your brand more, that helps break down those barriers, but not everybody has their own personal brand built. And that's a whole nother conversation. But do you see where I'm coming from?
I do.
Good.
You mentioned the importance of emotion in the conversation about the pain points. And is that being manipulative?
No, I don't believe so. Through my experience from working with a lot of people, I know a lot of people don't know what's in their best interest. So for example, I'll work with a lot of financial reps, and I won't say which companies, and some think that reaching out to their family and friends is the only way to succeed. That's what they were told. That's what they think is the only way of how they can build a book of business. But I have this graphic that I show prospects during our meetings. A warm market starts off a little quicker, then it pretty much flattens out. A cold market starts out slower. I'm completely honest about that. But typically over time, it gets more exponential. Let's put it this way. How many friends and family members does the average person have? A couple hundred?
But 100, they say? That's what typically shows up for your funeral?
Yeah. Oh, you're right. I remember reading that statistic once. Yeah, so 100, couple hundred. Online, LinkedIn has a platform that has, 750 million users. Now, how many are in the United States? Maybe 100, 200 million. Probably not even that many. But let's say 50 or 100 million. Regardless, a few hundred, 50 or 100 million, that's a big difference, right? So the potential of online is literally exponentially larger. But anyways, to get back to the main point, no, I don't believe that's manipulative because a lot of these people, like a lot of these financial reps, they're telling themselves the wrong story of saying, oh, I can only reach out to my family. Oh, I can only reach out to my friends. And you know, if that's what they want to do, that's completely fine. I'm a big fan of having multiple avenues if that's what your choice is. But a lot of them have literally no idea of what online can do for them. And so sometimes I'm trying to dig in and ask them, what does your pipeline look like? How do you plan to close business 6 months from now? Because when they admit this to me, then they finally get to the point of saying, you know, I just don't have enough prospects. I don't have enough business. I know I have the solution that can make their life better, can make their life easier. And so I believe it's my job to ask those questions to understand their pain, because then I can deliver that solution.
You mentioned about that it's not about closing, it's about opening. Give mm-hmm. us some more insights on how to have a better opening.
Ooh, I could go a lot of directions with this. First things first, let's say you use an automation software to do your outreach the way that I do, okay? And just to give you a very, very, very specific example. If you use an automation software to do the outreach, let's say you already connect with somebody and it sends them a message. So if you actually want to get a conversation started, do something as simple as go to their profile, take a minute, 30 seconds or a minute, doesn't need to be an hour, but actually go through their profile a little bit. Because, for example, if somebody said that they played college football on their profile, and I did as well, that's a point that legitimately resonates with them, right? And so when you actually understand somebody and you show that you actually care about getting to know them, they're going to actually maybe not want to talk with you, but it's going to be much more likely that they want to talk with you. And not enough people do that research there. And again, I'm not saying don't take a ton of time, because I'm not one of those people who cares about doing a bunch of extensive research for somebody who might not even reply in the first place. Go do more once you have a meeting set so that you actually know how to tailor the conversation, you know what to talk about when building the rapport. But not enough people actually take the time up front to understand what their prospect does. Because when you have a better understanding for them, you can ask the right questions. And when you ask the right questions, that's how you get them to actually stop and go, oh, this person's a real person who I want to talk to.
And I can see that from the receiving end. If I receive a message where someone has pointed out something we have in common, or at least recognize something about what I've done or do, then I see, well, okay, they did some research, so that's a good start. This isn't just a bot sending the same message to everyone. So that has a little bit more, that has a spark to it that, okay, I might be interested, I might be willing to let this conversation, versus if it's just cold, and I see that they obviously don't even know what I do, I'm thinking like, whoa, I'm not even going to waste my time here. Not even going to reply and tell them to drop dead.
I know. I did archived or deleted the message. You know, it's funny because I used to be one of those people, out of respect, I would reply to everybody. I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you know what? This isn't even worth my time. You are not entitled for me to respond to. And I say that because I've had a lot of people not respond to me. I'm busy. Because I would rather spend my quality time with my customers, with the prospects who do care, rather than trying to change someone's opinion or even reach out to somebody who's trying to sell me. Right? If I'm not interested. There was something else I was going to say, though. Did you have another question to follow up on that, though, George?
No. Did you recall what you were going to say? If not...
Yep, it's coming back to me. So this is a key point that I wanted to touch on. In general, because this is an overarching theme that I wanted the listeners to hear. Way too many people in sales, if you're not having success the way that you believe you should be, of course, there are many factors. There's what you're selling. There's what company you work for. But odds are, if you aren't closing as much as you want to be, you're too focused on yourself. And a lot of people don't get that. And I can say that because growing up, I was a very selfish person. And one of the biggest takeaways entrepreneurship has blessed me with is teaching me to think more about others and to be more particular, not just entrepreneurship, but sales. Because I remember, I can give you this, this is firsthand experience. When I first started my business, on almost every single call, when people ask me to tell them about myself, I would tell them my story. And to be completely honest, nobody cares about my story. You want the truth? Nobody cares about my story. Because the truth of the matter, all of us, our number one priority is us. And that's perfectly fine, because the example I give all the time, if for any of the listeners, I pulled open a water glass that has water in it. If this is empty, I have nothing to pour. This is why I'm a big fan of the morning routine, is because you need to fill up your own glass before you can pour in others. But anyways, once you get yourself aside, obsess over the other person, right? Because when you're focused on the other person and what they're struggling with, then you can actually solve their problems. And there are too many people who, like I've seen that with clients in the past, they have their offer, they reach out to the person, they say, hey, I have this offer, this is for you. They know nothing about their prospect, right? And that is just a sure way for failure. So take that to model off of for something not to do.
Value advice, they're too focused on self. And I can see that. And I believe I've been through that. Mm-hmm. I believe there's that point. Well, you know, how do I look? How do I sound? Did I say the right thing? Did I say it in the right way? Who cares? Did I tell my story? Who cares? We don't care. And in fact, I think that is a silly statement too. Tell me about yourself, or I'll tell you about myself. We don't care. And you probably have seen this, where too many sales presentations start off, well, here's our story. Who cares?
Nobody cares at all. It's funny that what that just made me think of, about a year and a half ago or so, I remember I was on a sales call with the guy who was trying to prospect me. We had talked on LinkedIn. We agreed to get on a call. He literally talked for the first anywhere between 13 to 15 minutes, didn't ask me a question. And I was, to be completely honest with you, I was kind of pissed off. I was not happy because it's just rude. It's annoying. I felt like I was wasting my time. And that is a great way to not get new business because he was too focused on himself. It did, like, even now sitting and thinking back on it, I was like, wow, how is that person even in sales? You know what I mean? And so for anybody, now not everybody is at that extent where they're going to just talk and talk and talk, but everybody's favorite topic, again, is themselves. So get the other person looped in. Plus, if you never worked with me specifically, how do you really know my pain points just based off your experience, right?
Valuable advice. And Austin, for those who are interested to learn more about the programs that you provide, the place to find out is at your website, and that is austinmccullough.com. You can find the link in below. You're going to add something?
Actually, so that is our old website. I'm glad that you brought that up. So that was one that we used in the past. We keep it active to redirect some of the links, but I'm eventually going to take it down so there's no confusion. It's actually mccullohadvising.com. So mccullooh advising.com. Yeah.
mccullohadvising.com. You can find that below. And if people want to just spend a half an hour having a chat with you, they can click on your calendar and they can book that half hour, no obligation, and see if you can help them
100%.
with their sales calls or sales prospecting. It's time to wrap up, Austin. And if you could offer one, two, or three pieces of advice, maybe it's something you've said already, to a sales leader at the beginning of their day to get their day off on the right foot for the conversations they're going to have today, what would be those one, two, or three pieces of advice?
At the beginning of the day, know what your actual outcome is and write down two to three or four clear objectives, right? So for example, don't just get, if you have an intro call with somebody, don't just say, I'm going to complete the intro call. What is your objective of the intro call? Because when you're on the call, you know what you're going for, right? So for me, if I'm on an intro call, I'm never trying to go for the close. I'm not one of those people who tries close right away. So I know for me, it's aim to set up a closing call, aim to set up a demo call, right? And I get clear on that. I even, something else that I do, and this is another thing that they could do, I track how many asks I make each day. Because you can't improve something you're not measuring. And I could do a better job of measuring it. But I would say those are a couple things. I mean, the main theme here is just make sure that you know what outcome you're going for, because you're going to make it much more likely to happen, because then you're keeping it front of mind rather than completely forgetting about it.
Valuable tips. And that's a good one for me too. Track the ask. I better start doing that.
Right.
My guest today is Austin McCullough, reminding you that you need to take the stairs one step at a time.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.